So I'd like to read to you a teaching of the Buddha that he taught in verse. I don't know if the verse comes across very well in translation. The Buddha often taught in verse. And he points to something very simple. I like to understand it to be the importance of simplicity of being or simplicity of attention to what is right here, right now. And which is a very basic and simple teaching, and he offers it this way. He was staying near Varanasi in a grove of trees called Jetta's Grove. It's a kind of a monastery he had that he could use. And he was teaching there in the grove of trees with his monks and nuns around him. And he said, "Monks and nuns?" And then they said, "Yes." And then he said, "I will teach you the summary and exposition of one who has had an auspicious day. Listen and pay close attention, and I will speak." "As you say," the monks and nuns replied. The Buddha said, "You shouldn't chase after the past or place expectations on the future. What is past is left behind. The future is as yet unreached. Whatever quality is present, you clearly see right there, right here. Not taken in, unshaken, that's how you develop the heart. Ardently doing what should be done today. For who knows what tomorrow brings? It might bring death. There is no bargaining with mortality. There's no bargaining with death and his mighty horde of helpers. Whoever lives thus ardently, both day and night, has truly had an auspicious day. So says the peaceful sage." The Theravada tradition puts a lot of importance on this verse by attributing it to originally to a Buddha who was a Buddha before the Buddha. Where, you know, there were supposed to be seven Buddhas before Buddha in kind of long gone distant ages. And the Buddha before the Buddha who spoke this and has been preserved in some way. It's a kind of mythical way of putting importance on something. And I thought of this verse on Friday when we had here a group of chaplains and chaplains in training, and they were talking about their experiences. Most of them, the stories they were telling were being in hospitals with people, often in pretty kind of in crisis, pretty serious, what we think pretty serious conditions of disease or dying, or often together, or the stories they told of being estranged from their family. So some of them being homeless or being on the edge of homelessness, being quite poor. And a story of one woman who took a while to be present for her and ask her and find out what was going on. And the thing that was most needed to help her was for someone to pay for her or let her make a phone call to some distant relative, some uncle who she kind of remembered, who she thought fondly of, because everyone else she was estranged with, and she didn't have enough money for a phone call. So there are these stories of, you know, people in difficult situations in hospitals. And then there were the stories of how these chaplains responded to them and how they met them. Chaplains are people who are there to offer spiritual care, whatever that is. But it's certainly different than, you know, bringing in the medicine or medical care. And one of the themes that came out of the discussion was the importance of offering to be present for the person as the person actually is or was. That rather than looking ahead or trying to fix necessarily always situation, but to really see the person in the condition the person was in fully and completely. And one person talked about how when he enters that kind of world as a chaplain, that he kind of takes the attitude or the position that the person or what's happening is the person's already perfect in some way. And even though the person's in a difficult situation, and you know, normally you think you want to fix the situation, or it seems it needs to be fixed, the starting point is to see that something is right here. So what's right here in the situation? And then help the person to acknowledge what is right here, what is going on here in the present moment that's appropriate or right or perfect, perhaps. One person told a story of a woman dying in the hospital who was estranged from her family. She had 5 kids, and none of them who she talked to. And she had been divorced when the kids were still children. Now they're adults, I think. The children had gone off. At the time, it seemed appropriate that the children go off with the father, and she agreed to that, and had been estranged. And I don't know her story or what had happened. But the chaplain was called into the hospital because by the nurses and the doctors, because they knew her story, that she was estranged from her 5 children, and they knew she was dying. And they felt that this was a situation that needed to be remedied, that for this person to die properly or fully or in some way, that this was needed to be remedied and somehow reconcile or meet once again her children. And the chaplain was sent in there to kind of work that out, to help that happen. And the chaplain went in there, and rather than taking with her the stories that the nurses and doctors were saying as being kind of the guide for how to take care of the situation, she was going to go in there and to meet the person actually as she actually is, the patient actually was, and find out who she was, what's right here, what's the situation here. And not to go in there with the baggage of the views that the doctors and nurses had told her. Well, you know. And so she went in there and she talked to her for quite some time, spent a lot of time talking with her. Actually, this woman spent an unusual long period of time in the hospital, I think many, many weeks. So this chaplain went and saw her on a regular basis and got to know her pretty well. And after checking it out for a long time with her, the chaplain felt that it was right that the woman not search out her children. That something, even though it sounds to most of us, to me, a little bit kind of tragic and terrible, that in taking time to find out what the situation was, what the woman's situation was, how she felt about it and what she needed to do and all that, that it felt right that to leave her alone, to see that that's what was appropriate, and not to push some agenda onto this woman who was dying. And in the end, she did die without seeing her children again. So to meet the situation in its simplicity, and just as it actually is, without rushing into it with our agendas and our needs, our fears, our desires, is a really important part of mindfulness practice. It's kind of the basis of mindfulness practice. It's the very simple thing. What is here? What is now? And here the Buddha, in this very famous teaching, begins by saying, "Don't chase after the past or place expectations on the future." And one of the things that people sitting down to meditate will realize very quickly is how easy it is for the mind to be chasing after the past or chasing after the future or hoping or expecting or planning for the future. I think that if you did a show of hands, we'd probably see a very large number of people here who would say that they spend a fair amount of time in meditation planning. Planning the day or planning their life or planning their honeymoon or planning their funeral or planning something. We tend to plan a lot. And I've spent certainly my share of time planning. And the thing that really struck me at some point was how not only did my plans not end up to happen the way that they were supposed to be, but the situation that I was planning for didn't even happen. I mean, let alone, just the event was canceled. And that was a way, and as I've told you sometimes, I spent a year once planning for something. I thought I was going to be the guest cook at Tassajara. I spent a whole year planning menus and planning and evaluating the food I was served. And then I was surprised they didn't make me the guest cook. And I realized, why? What was all that time spent doing? And then there's chasing after the past. And, you know, it's kind of one little pithy thing that I say often, a cliche that's been said, that forgiveness is giving up all hope for a better past. And there are people who spend a lot of time reviewing the past and trying to make it better or improve it or fix it or, you know, what could I have said? What should I have said? Or, you know, if only I had. But there's other reasons for kind of chasing the past. Chasing the past is a little bit different than remembering the past. Memories will pop up in meditation quite easily. It's often part of the purification practice of meditation, is memories will come. But then there's also chasing the memories, or getting engaged in them and indulging in them, getting lost in them. And some people will spend a lot of time chasing after the past for various reasons. So the Buddha suggests that you don't do that. And I know it's easier said than done. But to have some sense that it's important, that something, to have some idea that something auspicious is the word used here, something precious, something wonderful, is to be found in the present moment. That cannot be found if we spend a lot of time lost in the past or lost in the future. To know that, it begins to pull the rug from underneath that interest we might have, the psyche might have, with the past and the future. And in some sense, the past and the future is virtual reality. And we want to live in that virtual reality, even though it might be energizing in different ways. What is past is left behind. What is past is left behind. I heard Jack Kornfield once give a teaching on this that I thought was really lovely. I can't do it the same way as he did. But he talked about... you know what you had for breakfast? Well, maybe that's not the best example because it's still in your stomach, maybe. But the conversation you had yesterday, what happened yesterday, who won the Giants game or not, or the conversations you had at work last week, or your successes and failures over the last year, what happened to you as a young person or as a teenager or as a child, all that stuff. It's all gone to the same place as the pyramids have gone to, as Cleopatra and Caesar and Antony have gone to, as the Civil War has gone to, as, you know, it's all gone to the same place. It's all that stuff. Even what happened, you know, the thoughts you had in meditation just, you know, 20 minutes ago, it's all gone to that place. As the pyramids, as the dinosaurs. Where's that? So I don't know if that worked for you in the way it worked for me, but it was kind of like, wow, where's it gone? Is it really gone? You know, and you know the past. You know, we could talk about the past as being a day ago, or a week ago, or a year ago, or 1,000 years ago, or 1,000,000 years ago. But in some sense, it's all in. You know, it's all just gone to the same place. It's not any further away than. Is it further away if it's 1 day or 10 years? Just, you know, it's just there, wherever it goes. The past is left behind. The future is not yet reached. It's not, in other words, it's not here yet. So when we relate to the future, we're relating to imagination. We're relating to something which is conjured by the mind. It's something that's imagined or by the mind, constructed by the mind. The future, you can never really know what it's going to be like. And so whatever your thoughts are about the future are thoughts. They're ideas. And are they trustable? Are the ideas, are your plans and fantasies and imaginations of the future something that you want to live in? And how much credence, how much value do you want to put in it? So that it blinds you to what's really happening here and now. So the past is left behind, the future is not yet reached. Whatever quality is present, the word here is dharma. Whatever dharma, dharma means many different things. Whatever quality, some inner quality, situation, a thing, a way, teaching. Whatever thing, you know, I think the word here, I think, means all those things. You know, whatever is here right now, whatever the quality of that thing is, whatever the teaching of that thing, whatever the way that's found in that thing, whatever it is in right here and now, you should see it clearly. right, and here in this translation it says right, it repeats it twice. You should see it clearly right there, right there. And I was surprised when I read this by the word there, right there. Because there is somewhere else. You know, shouldn't it say right here, right here? Because, you know, here and now. But it says right there. And then when I read it to you the first time, I if you remember, I said, since it says twice, I said first time I said right there, and then second time I said right here. Kind of to catch both nuances. But right, then I thought right there. There's something about the statement right there that lets the observer be independent. And even the inner quality, I think it's right there. And but also it has a sense of separation. And there's something very wonderful about separation, independence, and there's something alienating about it. And the here is less alienating, it's less separating. So we're here, we're in this, you know, in it together, for example, or whatever. And maybe both, there's both something, a weakness and a strength in the word here, and a weakness and strength in the word there. And so there's something strong about there. I'm independent, I see it there, I'm really there for that thing. And there's something really wonderful about saying here. To see it clearly, right here, right there. Not taken in, not fooled by it. Not fooled by what is here. And this is a big part of Buddhist practice, is not to be fooled by our imagined projections of what's here, be seduced by it or tricked by it, or it's so that we get involved in relationships of aversion or clinging or fear for what's right here, but just to kind of be here and see it for what it is. And that was the stories that these chaplains told over and over again, was the practice of learning to see what is right here, not being fooled by it. The person wasn't fooled by the stories of nurses and doctors, and wasn't biased by that, and so was able to kind of meet the person more fully, directly for who she was. So not be taken in by the present moment, by reality, and then unshaken, to be unshaken by reality. To be here, to have the kind of presence where you hear very simply for things as they actually are in the moment, and then not to be agitated by that or shaken or thrown off by that. And that's easy to be said, you know, sitting, maybe perhaps meditating quietly on Sunday, nice Sunday morning. But what is it like, you know, when you're in the hospital with someone who's dying or someone who's quite agitated, him or herself? Or what is it like in some, you know, different situations in our life where it's often, you know, the present moment can be quite challenging. One of the reasons people spend a lot of time in the past or in the future is because they don't want to be in the present moment. The present moment is agitating, it's fearful, and so it's better to avoid it, right? And so, what is it to learn how to be unshaken, or to be fearless, or to be balanced, or relaxed, or equanimous with whatever is going on in the present moment, to see it fully and to bring that kind of presence to it? And many times, even difficult situations go a lot better when we can bring a simple presence. Just, okay, I'm here for it, and I'm just going to relax and be here for it and not get agitated by it. That unagitated kind of presence often, I think of, opens doors of possibility that would not be possible if we rush to fix it or rush to get away or rush to push it away. And then the word ardently. Ardently doing what should be done today. For who knows what tomorrow brings? It might bring death. So that's a common teaching, right? You often hear, you know, you never know when you're going to die. So, carpe diem, you know. I guess that means grab the day. Is that what it means? Seize the day. I don't know if Buddhists are into seizing the day. but that kind of teaching, you know, this day here is important. And this moment here, this person here you're with. This kind of teaching I remind myself of often. I find myself reminding myself often with my children. Sometimes I love being with my children. It's just great. And sometimes, I wouldn't say that I love it. And sometimes I'd rather be somewhere else. But there I am. You know, this is the present moment. This is what's happening now. And so the question is, you know, am I going to be here for this moment? Or am I going to be annoyed or agitated or see as a nuisance or, you know, have half my foot out the door? Or, you know, what is it to meet the situation that I find uncomfortable? What is it to be here for this in a simple way? What does it require to kind of see this situation as in a sense, right or complete? And when I look at this, what I have to be, it's very humbling to do this, because when I look at myself, I realize the situation is basically fine. But there's something inside of me, some attachments, some ideas, some views of what I think is important, what I should be doing, or what I shouldn't, what shouldn't be happening. There's all the kinds of things going on inside of me that makes me feel a bit shaken by the situation or unsettled. So, you know, what is it to find my balance and my unshakability? What is it to be here fully for this, to accept this? Oh, this too. I'm going to accept this situation as being the totality of life right here, now. When I was first sitting retreats at the San Francisco Zen Center many years ago, I had a tremendous amount of physical pain during those retreats. I would get up to do the 10-minute walking meditation, and my whole body would be shaking because of the pain of which I was sitting in. And then at 10 minutes, the shaking would stop and I would go to sit down again. And I would have the pain reappear. And one of the ways that I managed to be with the pain was I had these two little attitudes or mantras that I would tell myself. One was, I would say, what if this is forever? And if I said that, rather than being discouraged, it was like then I would just, okay, I have to just accept this. This is going to be here forever. There's no fighting it. I just have to accept it. And that, you know, the little statement kind of allowed me to accept it to get through the next 2 seconds. Until I had, you know. And the other statement I would make myself was, I just say the word, something like, moment by moment. I'm just going to get through this moment. Just be fully here for this moment. Just that would, you know, and put enough moments together, you get, they eventually they ring the bell. So I don't know if that's a good example of acceptance, but but you know, it's often a practice, you know, to do many situations. You know, what is it to require to really accept the situation in a way? Accepting doesn't mean condoning it or letting it go kind of ways which are wrong. But what is it to accept it in the heart, in the psyche, in the mind, so the heart is not agitated or shaken or by it? How do we develop the heart, which is one of the phrases here in this, in these verses? I think there are a few people who are enamored with going on long, long retreats, going off and becoming a monastic. And it's, you know, then you can really practice and go deep and, you know, really live the religious life. And it's a great thing. I've done all those things and they are really great. People who want to do it, I encourage them to do it. But, you know, as Gary Snyder has said, it's as difficult to get up in the early morning to chant Buddhist sutras as it is to get up in the morning and get the kids ready for the carpool. And, you know, and reality is a teacher. The present moment is a teacher, not the monastery or the teachings or whatever. And so to see the teachings right there and, you know, getting to the carpool, or doing the carpool, you know, imagine these three kids in the back seat. Usually it's sweet, but and you know, right there is the teaching, is the reality. And to think it's somewhere else, to think that oh, I'm going to take care of all the washing the dishes and getting the food ready and going shopping and washing my clothes and, you know, wiping noses and wiping butts. I had no idea that human beings went around doing what they do until I had kids. Certain things only dogs do, you know, I thought. Like, I lift babies up and sniff their butts. And I thought only dogs went out sniffing other dogs' butts. But human beings do that too. At least some parents do. I said, what do I smell? Do you need diaper change? And go, yep. It's amazing. And you think you do all these things as quickly as you can so you can get to the practice, you know, you've lost an opportunity. You know, that is the practice, those things. That's where practice occurs. What is it to have a simple presence? To simply be there for that activity as fully as you can, not lost in the future and the past, not chasing expectations of the future, which often has to do with ideas and dreams and hopes for something different than what's happening right now. What is it to just be here in a simple way for this one thing right now, here? It's such a simple thing, even though it might feel like the rodeo at times. Not this. You know, I can accept everything, but not this. But to accept this. And many years ago, I did a class and I gave people the assignment, once during the week, take a situation that was challenging and rather than and in that challenging situation you find yourself in, the response you should take, for at least for a reasonable length of time, is don't do anything, but stay present and be attentive. And that next week, someone came back, and the couple who were in the class came back, and they reported, they were at some very difficult party. I don't know why with party it was difficult. It was a very difficult party situation. And the husband leaned over to the wife. I think that's the way it worked. And said to her, remember that assignment Gil gave? Now's the time. Don't do anything, just be attentive. I hope he did it wisely. I wasn't thinking that other people were going to tell people when to do it. But anyway, it turned out really well. And the same person, many years later, actually a couple of years ago, came to me and said that he was on an outing with his daughter, who was grown up by this time. And he had his expensive camera with him, and they were on the beach on the cliffs, I think it was. And I think he said, you know, he had issue with anger. So his daughter knew he has a big issue with anger and frustration in a certain kind of area in his life. And they were out there on the cliffs, and he dropped his camera into the water. And this was the kind of situation that normally the daughter knew her father would get really angry. It would be difficult for the whole family. And she was blown away. Because he didn't get angry. And he said, no, you know, they said, this is what's happening now, he said. This was the reality of the moment. And I just had to kind of be there for that moment, for that reality, for that reality of this. The camera dropped in the water. This is what was happening. This also. And so he took this to be the fruit of his practice, that, you know, that his years of usual way of dealing with things had fallen away, and he was able to just be there for this as it actually is. And it shocked his daughter. And I've heard that other time, people shocked by when people don't get agitated. Because, you know, that's the history of people. They always get agitated and suddenly they don't. So the simplicity, it's something really simple. You know, it doesn't require anything. It requires almost not doing anything. Just being here for this experience, what's happening right now, and letting it speak for itself, letting it unfold for itself, let it show itself, to see clearly and deeply, what is this? Or to have the first response in any situation, the question, what is this really? What is this really? Rather than going to our first impressions or our first ideas or first bias or first, what is this really? Take a moment. What is this really? And then, you know, maybe you'll find out it's very different. Well, what's really needed here? There's another interesting question. What's really needed? I like the word really. What's really needed? Because it requires stopping and thinking. What's really needed here? How often is nothing needed? I reflected a lot about this in conversation. when I have something really important to say that's really needed. And let me just interrupt. And what about not interrupting? What about just being and listening and finding out how things unfold? And I am amazed how often what I thought would need to be said didn't need to be said. It came out of the conversation naturally. A person thought about it themselves, or you know, just didn't need to be said, or was completely off. It was wrong. You know, I'm glad I didn't say that. There is no bargaining with mortality. Who knows when death comes? No bargaining with mortality. I think that's a great expression. No bargaining with death. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't explain what I think that means. It probably means something different for each of you. And I think it's a very powerful thing. Don't bargain with your mortality. Don't bargain with it. Negotiate. Whoever lives ardently, both day and night, has truly had an auspicious day. So says the peaceful sage. Peaceful sage. So here's a man saying this. He's talking about himself, I suppose. Though the peaceful sage, maybe you know, he's quoting the past Buddha. Maybe that's who the peaceful sage is. But he says the person who's peaceful. Someone who can do this discovers where peace is found. Peace is found here, here and now. How to be peaceful with what this actually is. And has had an auspicious day. Thich Nhat Hanh translates this as the better way of living alone. It's very ambiguous what the Pali means here in this word, in this situation here. Another translation has been has one auspicious attachment, or one auspicious enjoyment, depending how you translate the one of the words. But here the translation is one auspicious day. I like this. I like that one. One wonderful day. One special day. One auspicious has more than just wonderful. The word is translated here has also the meaning of an omen. So like auspicious, an omen, it's something, a sign or something really wonderful. Reminds me of the idea of a Sabbath, an auspicious day. Sabbath is just a day to be, not to do a lot and run around and work, and just to be and very simple, to just be here with what is now. So that's a complicated talk. Maybe too complicated, where something was meant to be a very easy idea, simple idea. Just be with what is. Make it your first instinct to be with what is before you try to change things. Sometimes we need to change things, but have you learned to accept it first? Have you learned to be unshaken by it first? Have you learned to be at peace with it first? Before you change it. So we're not changing it because we're uncomfortable with it, because we're agitated by it. Change it while you're at peace with it, rather than while you're still agitated. So something very simple. So like the exercise I gave many years ago, I would encourage you all to this week to look for situations that would be unusual for you to practice this. Look for situations where you can try doing nothing, but just being attentive, being present, and see what unfolds if you do that. I've even had situations where people have been angry with me, and I've done nothing, and the situation changed for the better. So those are my thoughts for today. What are your thoughts? Do you have any questions or comments you'd like to make? Yes? Oh yes, happy Father's Day, thank you. Yeah, happy Father's Day to everyone here, his fathers. And, yes?
but do nothing about it. I, by nature, am very anxious socially, and I do nothing. I go into a corner and disappear.
Yeah, that
doesn't seem like the right do nothing. So I'm trying to understand that to be present.
Yeah.
And do nothing means.
Good. I think you know, it depends how we talk about, you use words, right? So in Buddhist language, which is kind of weird, maybe, but we would say that you weren't doing nothing. You were escaping.
Hiding
or something. And so doing nothing would mean show up in a situation, and when you feel the fear or the discomfort, the anxiety, whatever it might be, that propels you to act, and the acting here is to hide, is then don't do anything. But rather, so don't act, don't run away, don't hide, but rather stay in the middle of the room, don't go to the corner. Stay in the immediate situation that you find yourself in, where you're anxious, and stay present for your anxiety. Yeah.
I have to do something,
right,
to be beyond, to not be anxious.
It isn't. Yeah. Right. So. I mean, there's many things you could do that are wise. One approach that I think is, you know, I would think of first doing, is stopping in a sense, and offering a lot of presence to the anxiety itself. And just okay. I'm anxious. I'm really going to take this in. This is what's going on, and bringing a lot of mindfulness into the anxiety, eventually will give you a kind of strength, some way of holding it, so that it's that anxiety. Really be there for the anxiety, but the anxiety is not you, or the anxiety is not in control. And to bring
it, present,
really be present to anxiety. And for some people, it's very, very liberating. It's very painful and a slow process, but to really learn how to bring a kind of full mindfulness and presence to anxiety itself, to the point where the anxiety loses its sting, loses its power or hold over a person. That's one approach. And then a second approach, which is related to that, which maybe doesn't work in most social situations, but one that I like a lot in principle, is that once you acknowledge you're anxious in a situation, then you share that anxiety, share that information with the people around you and say, you know, this is really hard for me. I'm really anxious. This is what's happening now. You don't have to do anything different, but I just want to acknowledge what's going on here. And that's very powerful to do that, just to acknowledge what's happening, just to speak what's happening in the present moment out loud. Accepting what's happening in the present moment has to include what's happening within us, offering that. So that's one thought. You had something?
Well, this morning I actually thought of stay close and do nothing. The exercise we did recently.
Yeah.
And I think where most of us get stuck on is do nothing. Because, you know, but I was just thinking of another way of, like, in similar to what you were discussing with her, was do nothing, just observe and see what's arising right now. It could be the anxiousness, it could be whatever the fears are, or whatever that experience that we're going to do something to get
right
away from it. So just being, you know, like you say, just be present and see if we can notice what's actually occurring.
Yeah. I think in the teachings of the Buddha, I don't think I can ever recall a situation when he says, do nothing. Because it's always, and here the teaching is, observe, look clearly, look deeply. And that is a kind of a doing, to look more clearly. What's really going on here? But we think of nothing, you know, if you don't act or don't talk or don't follow up, you know. But there's always a doing, which minimum can be look more deeply. And then the idea being, partly the idea being that the actions that we do follow in the wake of seeing clearly. So we don't want to stay passive, but the activity follows the clear seeing. So that's, I don't know if that's helpful, Barbara, but that's my thought. So may all of you have an auspicious day.